Okay. The next speaker is Antonio, who's now working at Huawei, and he's going to give an overview about HyperOS, which was his project from his previous job.
Yes, exactly. Thanks for the introduction. So I'll start with some boilerplate disclaimer, saying that this only reflects my view and not the one of my current nor previous employer. So that's done. We can start now. So you may have noticed the strong reference in the title. It's totally intended, of course. So like this good show, I think the HyperOS project was very promising, had an amazing cast, and also had a somewhat somehow controversial last season. But we'll get into that. First, a little bit of highlights about my own curriculum. So I did the master degree and PhD in this university. And in the meantime of my PhD, I joined a spin-off project called HyperOS until 2019, where I joined the Huawei Dresden Research Center, which is new, to work as an operating system researcher. So, small words about this research center. It's a microkernel and operating system lab where we do research such as scalable kernel architecture, design exploration, formal verification, virtualization techniques, and these kind of things. The lab started in February 2019, and we are more than 20 researchers now. So, if you're interested, we can have a chat about that. So the agenda, there's a lot of points and not a lot of time, so I will go through it. First, I want to start with the human story behind the RTOS, what's the story of this project. So it all started here in the university, there are plenty of research labs in ULB. And usually we identify three missions or roles for a university. It's teaching, like getting the students to get the diploma, their courses, research, and then valorization, which is some kind of taking some things out of the university to the real world. And in our case, HyperOS falls in that leader category. So HyperOS was a spin-off. So it's taking science from a laboratory into a commercial product. It started with two different research labs, one which was focusing on real-time scheduling theory, in the computer science department, another one in the engineering department about digital system design. Basically, researchers and entrepreneurs met together and brainstormed new ideas about operating system architecture and how to create a new real-time operating systems, how to applying the research results from the real-time literature into modern platform. And this became HyperOS, which is a very ambitious acronym, meaning High Performance Parallel Embedded Real-Time Operating Systems. And as you may have noticed, there is a S in the end of systems, meaning that it's not one single operating system, it's a family of operating systems. So the basic idea was to create a company that wants to sell products, all revolving around the business of real-time operating systems, including creating a new microkernel for embedded systems, like applying new software or architecture paradigms and scheduling theory policies and so on. And within this business, somehow keep strong links with academia and research, and actually performing research on the operating systems. So it was this very ambitious and crazy idea to get the OS into any device imaginable, from small IoT device to complex certifiable products such as planes or cars. So in 2006, the project started with the two research labs I was mentioning, and there was some kind of funding, storytelling, design ideas that were laid out. And in around 2012, the first developers, young researchers, joined the project, and it was mainly funded by European projects. That's the time where we founded the foundation, we laid out the foundation of the new kernel. So it was basically doing embedded development, everybody with the board on their desk and trying to get it working and on different architecture. And yeah. So between 13 and 15, we started to the code base, actually. And we are very proud and very inexperienced. We were very happy when the code, for the first time, jumped into user mode. And we, in 2014, the actual company was created. And nice anecdote I'd like to tell is we met Andrew Tannenbaum because we wanted to do a microkernel, so we had a conference with him. And at some point he said, okay, to create a new kernel, you take 3 students, you make them work for 3 years, and that's only the beginning. And that's exactly what we'll do. So it's a very long process to have it working. So from 16 to 19, we secured other fundings, a European project, landed the first customer, and basically around that time we were between 4 to 15 people, depending on how and when, and how you count actually the staff, if it's employees or people working with us, collaborator, and so on. It was also the time where I finished my PhD, but this is not relevant for here. So the question I get asked more often is why to create a new real-time operating system, yet a new kernel? And the basic answer are the following. We wanted to facilitate the development of high-performance high-end embedded systems because it's sometimes hard to enter this domain as a developer. We wanted to use modern hardware, meaning multi-core, SMP, and even heterogeneous platform efficiently and safely. And we wanted a low footprint, but still with a rich set of features operating system. And so this whole set of requirements, multi-threading, power management, real-time scheduling, meaning hard real-time scheduling guarantees, parallelism in the kernel, and support for heterogeneous modern platforms, including also possibly the certification of all these aspects. At that time, we were not able to find one, so maybe that was not really true, but somehow having all of that combined together was not pretty common in 2006. So now I will go through the high-level features of the operating system. So basically, the vision is to have an operating system for high-end embedded systems that must be performance, reliable, efficient. And for very demanding application, modern like computer vision, embedded artificial intelligence, robotics, this kind of very autonomous systems, but still that needs safety. So we support the C standard library with a POSIX compliant API. We have some kinds of exotics also cores available to do some native stuff like managing internet service routines in user mode, IPC. These are the toolchain we support, GCC, LLVM, also Xilinx tools to do a high-level synthesis. We had some POSIX compliance, mainly what is usually targeted for embedded systems that was required to support large frameworks like OpenCV for image processing. Architecture we supported are ARMv7 mainly, ARMv8 also, x86 on emulators, PowerPC, and ARC that we discontinued at the end, but at some point we were supporting it. The device drivers, so one important features that we really loved, it was to being able from the operating system to reconfigure the FPGA, like on the Xilinx platform, where you have one FPGA with CPUs, the operating system is running on the CPUs and it's reconfiguring the FPGA when the user needs this feature. Ethernet, SDIO with file systems, and other usual drivers. We supported the network stack by basically porting an existing open source stack, LWIP, and the only thing we had to do was to develop the different Ethernet drivers for the different platforms we supported. So what's the runtime model? What's the build environment of Hypera? So it's basically revolving around the concept of task, process, and threads. Tasks are basically the offline information about the program, that it's like the code, but also real-time requirements that you can add, like you can add a deadline, you can add period, you can add execution time budget to the concept of task. And at runtime, a task becomes a process. And this process has all the dynamic information to make it run. And when the process is running, the operating system is enforcing that the real-time properties that are documented in these tasks are enforced. And then you can add, a process can be multi-threaded, like having a different number of threads running in parallel with some processor affinities. So how do you create an application with HyperOS? You have basically your tasks that you configure. You can configure it with CMake. That's an option. It's a recommended option. And you have this file, the task set, which contains all the runtime information about the task, like timing behavior and these kind of things. And you have to link it with the HyperOS package, which comes as a binary, together to create the final image running on the system. So in practice, tasks are some plain C, C++ programs, like here it's a Hello World example, that use native HyperOS printf. And that's pretty much it. And this is a task set, which is an XML file where you give all the information about your task. So this is the idea of a very somehow static. It's not like general purpose operating system where you spawn dynamically the different threads. As it is an embedded one, you have a predefined number of processes that are in the system, and they are all documented in an offline XML file where you have the name of the file, the size of the stacks of the stack in byte, how it behaves regarding recurrence. And you have other information as well, like timing information, offset, worst-case execution time, deadline, period, all these things that you put to add information about the timing behavior. Also, the core affinities. If you want the process to start on a specific core, you can specify it here. And this is some configuration. Basically, this slide is here to say that you can use CMake to build your HyperOS application, and you have some basic primitives of CMake that are shipped to being able to automating the configuration. This is not really important. What about this build environment? So we had this idea that we wanted to do a family of operating system. So with very large number of build options that can be configured at build time. So you can, for example, select your scheduling policies, the way that the memory model is laid out, or if you want independent application running as ELF file or a statically linked approach where you link statically the operating system, the different tasks together, and you have only one final image. So depending on the use case, we supported different approaches. So like I said, HyperOS is distributed with CMake-based build environments and with a SDK which run inside the Docker container image to be able to set all the dependencies with the right version and not interfering with your system. This, of course, is totally optional. If you want to install all the dependencies on your machine, it's always possible. So architecture overview. So when you have some strong objectives, like strong targets, like embedded systems that must be safe and efficient, you usually have this criteria, like reliability, predictability, performance, and security. And now I will go through them and say what we choose to try to accommodate these different requirements. So what are the HyperOS features for reliability? Basically, it was a microkernel-based operating system. I think in that room, I don't have to explain what a microkernel is. But basically, we are pushing as much as possible the different components in user space, especially drivers. Memory virtualization. Again, you can choose the different layout that you want. If you want one page table per process with very isolated paging, or you can have a single page table with protection attributes that basically it's a shared virtual address space for the different processes where the kernel is protected. About predictability, basically it was the implementation of the research results of the real-time literature, implementing the different hard real-time schedulers such as the classic one, rate monotonic, earliest deadline first, but also some more recent results that are proven to be more efficient in the resource usage, such as unfair EDF, for example. We had some prototype. We had some monitoring of the real-time behavior, and also a master-slave architecture that I will explain in details a little bit later. Okay, and also the some mechanism of priority inheritance between a process when you were if you're sending an IPC to a device driver, for example, this device driver can take the priority of the sending process to ensure that there is no priority inversion. About performance, so one of the main things is using a performance scheduler, fast communication mechanism such as zero copy IPC, and try to have fast user space abstraction such as lightweight tracing, multi-threading support, mapping the I/O to user user land, and exploiting the modern hardware such as FPGA, and also power management like dynamic and voltage, dynamic frequency and voltage scaling. And security is perhaps the weakest part of the kernel because we are not at all security experts, but there are some things that were enforced that may protect by design the system, such as the whole system tasks are known at compile time. There was no like hidden processes or things that you could attack. Yeah, you can disable the network by default, but then you cannot contact your target. And yeah, basically the memory isolation also serves for security purpose. We had this kernel and hardware abstraction layer separation in different modules, allowing to test them independently and really ease the development of the system. Like for each board or each architecture that we supported, we only had to change the hardware abstraction layer. These are the mechanisms that are in the kernel. So memory management is not in user space. It's done in a kernel space. And you have the scheduler is also in kernel space. Of course, IPC and different system cores and all the things that you see on this slide. The kernel is written in C, and you have several variants for the different modules. You can replace, for example, the scheduler, because all scheduler of HyperOS respect the same API, and you can just replace at build time the one that you want. The HAL has these really low-level hardware-specific mechanisms, such as configuring the interrupts, memory management, caches, and clocks, and so on. Yeah, okay. The advantage is that it was easy to port to new architecture. It was also easy to test the different components independently, such as the kernel was tested without the HAL, and the HAL was tested directly with unit tests running on the targets. And now about the master-slave architecture, which is one of the innovation, I think, in this project. The idea was to implement SMP support with this asymmetric architecture. Like the master kernel was actually a big piece of code, and the slave kernel was as thin as possible. Here is a scheme to have a look, a little bit more detailed. The master kernel is basically responsible to manage the transition between states for the processes. So each time you have to call the scheduler, you need to do a remote system call. For example, if you want to exit or create a new task dynamically, you go to what we call a remote system call, which is basically inter-processor interrupts, waking up the master core to say, okay, you need to enter in kernel mode to update the structure, the internal image of the kernel. And then the context switch were also in the other way. It's an inter-processor interrupt to ask a core to manage to execute a context switch. The slave kernel is basically managing context switches, and the master is managing everything else, except for some very critical part of the kernel that need to be very performant and to avoid overflowing the master. The idea, for example, to execute an IPC, copy the content of a buffer IPC, was done without intervention of the master. So there was remote system call, IPI context switch, and yes, if you want, for example, to, I don't know, very simple things like getting your PID or asking read-only information to the kernel, this was only a local system call without calling the master. So this approach has several advantages. The first one is it becomes really easy to design kernel features because you don't have to mess with different level of locking, of granularity, and so on. The only place of the kernel where there was lockings was in this system, system called protocols to exchange between the master and slave, but it's in one specific point of the code base. Everything else is like simple sequential design. It also has been proven as a scalable solution when if you enter the number, if you increase the number of cores, it's in a paper. But I need to speed up because I have 5 minutes left. Okay, so like I said, there is a different memory model if you enable or not DMMU and if you want to isolate the different tasks. There is two different kind of IPC, one which is synchronous, where you share memory and you have basically handshaking protocols that is managed to avoid to write where you when you cannot write to the pages. This is useful when you have big big data exchange, and otherwise you have the kernel copy. This I will skip. And then some, we had some research results. We used the kernel basically to publish some papers, some results about our architecture, some about power management or memory scheduling. So this is power management measurements, where you have the board connected to an oscilloscope. Mixed criticality scheduling, where you have different tasks that have different certification requirements. We also tested it on directory on the platform. And also some scheduling policies to avoid memory interferences. All these results are published and we can discuss afterwards if you're interested. And these are the kind of use cases that we had in the different European projects. It was Tulip was to create a platform for image processing, and we had to deliver the operating system components. So this is a drone that we're doing obstacle avoidance by analyzing by doing a depth math, a depth image, and so it was basically doing real-time image processing to avoid obstacles. The same with an automotive pedestrian detection camera. And finally, X-ray filtering that also requires some real-time video for the surgeon to operate. These are the different kind of use cases where we deployed HyperOS for research projects. Okay, so the conclusion. HyperOS was a very big idea of this real-time operating system managing different devices with modern heterogeneous parallelism. And I think it was a nice fit to the adaptive AUTOSAR standards. So this one of the points of doing this talk today was that initially this operating system was fully proprietary. But recently, the company went bankrupt for lack of funding. And so we found out that open source is actually a nice opportunity to make the project live. And so as a future work, I would like to open I have the authorization to open the code base. But we still need to decide about, for example, what kind of license we want, and we need to also have dual licensing scheme because it will not be completely open source. There will be some proprietary open source. And by open sourcing it, the idea is that the kernel can become a playground for new ID algorithm policies for the real-time community, for researchers or students. But I'm no IP expert, so I'm open to the discussion if you have idea or suggestion. And I would like also to have a model that do not scare the external contributors that can include them. It's quite hard to find somewhat between fully open source and proprietary to find the good way to go. So my agenda for future work is to first do a code base of the cleanup. Cleanup of the code base. Define the license and the contribution model, create a landing page, and then finally open source the code base. Okay, thank you.
We have time for maybe one very quick question.
Quick question.
Your choice.
Oh, okay. Yeah, then.
Okay, this is just about the symmetric design. As I understand, typically in the fast performing computation, when you allocate the data structure, you try to put it per CPU and avoid remote call. As I understand, you mostly try to use the only remote call from the CPU idea. So how it improves your performance, or how it have an implication on your performance?
You mean the fact that it's you need to wait for the master?
You use the remote CPU data structures.
So you mean, so what the advantages was that when you do that, all the image of the kernel, for example, stays in the cache, and then you have less cache bouncing between cores. That's one of the advantage.
Typically, when you use it inside, you don't need any locks.
So this is the question.
The question is whether you have an implication on performance, whether you have a worse performance than it can be.
Okay, we can take that offline, maybe.
Okay,
okay, sorry.
Thanks again.
Okay, thanks.